You're now listening to Wisdom from North podcast with me, Jannike Øynes. Here I will explore topics such as metaphysics, spirituality, personal growth, and in general, how we can create good lives for ourselves. My intention is to find some answers, but perhaps more importantly, finding new questions to ask, because there is always something new to discover in this wonderful universe that we live in. In Wisdom from North, we're passionate about helping you take your spiritual growth to that next level. That's why we are collaborating with some amazing spiritual teachers and partners who offer free webinars and classes. Go to wisdomfromnorth.com/free. Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in this podcast belong to the guests and do not necessarily represent the views or positions of Wisdom from North or any entities they may represent. Now, please enjoy the episode.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, Rebecca. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm very glad to have you, and I'm looking forward to see where our conversation will go today. I know that you are a channeler. You've written 4 books, and you're helping your community and the world actually change through your powerful messages of transformation and powerful messages about the shift in consciousness that we find ourselves in. And I know that you've been channeling since you were around 18 years old, or that something happened when you were 18. And I find that very fascinating that you were on a different path in your life, like you were studying as a normal kid, immersed in a student life, and the divine came along and had other plans. And I would love to hear that story. And later on, perhaps we can also have some channeling. But please share what happened when you were 18.
Oh, well, thank you for that beautiful introduction. So, wow, what happened when I was 18? I'm going to begin with actually when I was much younger, because I always had the ability to see and feel things. I had an awareness that there was life beyond us, because I could see energies and see colors around people. And I had friends that lived in the garden that looked like swirls of energy. I saw deceased grandparents when they passed away, these sorts of things. So because I had this way of seeing and feeling, it was recognized when I was quite young. And I was very fortunate that my mother put me into meditation classes when I was about 9 years old, because I don't think there was too much around at that time. This was in the early 80s. So I was very fortunate to at least be able to express and develop a comfort, a level of comfort and normality without, by being this way. because certainly you couldn't talk about it at school. And I was raised Catholic. So, you know, Catholic school, we don't talk about those sorts of things. I learned very quickly. And it wasn't something that was an open discussion like it is today. I certainly couldn't ever imagine the kinds of conversations that you, for example, bring to the world ever being popular or even possible. So during all that, I was actually quite an academic student. So I was very much left brain. And my pursuits were really to be the best in academia and whatever it was that I did. And then by the time I was about 16, 17, I was really more interested in, again, the deeper questions and the deeper meanings behind things. So when I was 18 and I was already studying at university, I walked into a small, what you might call New Age shop in my hometown of Perth, and I saw these ancient Egyptian tarot cards. And I'd never seen anything like them, and there was a lot of amazing symbology in them. I didn't know anything about tarot. I wasn't really interested in tarot. I was just interested in the pictures on these cards. So I took them home with me and I started playing with them on the floor and really learning about the symbolism in each of these cards. And I thought it was amazing and it spoke to me. And I felt very empowered and there was some real remembrance there for me. So I started to practice with family and friends. So they came around and I would sit there and play with these cards. And after about 2 months of that, I started to get very popular. I didn't really know what I was doing. And someone came and sat with me and they had been through a very difficult relationship breakup. And as they were sitting there and I put the cards out, suddenly my whole energy expanded and I felt huge. My head was enormous. It felt like there was a lot of pressure inside my body building up and stretching me out. And then suddenly, my voice changed, and it was no longer consciously me speaking. And all of this information and wisdom flowed about this person and why what was happening was happening for them and what they could discover about it and how it was very helpful for them. And about an hour had passed, and I had no idea. I had no sense of time. I was still there listening, but it felt as if I moved to the back of me. So I was behind me watching what was happening. And it felt like really only a few minutes. And when I came out of it, the person sitting in front of me was just stunned. And I didn't really understand what had happened. I knew about the concept of channeling, but I had no reference really for what it was that I was experiencing. And that was just the beginning, because after that came a very intense and I would say challenging period where I had to try to discover what this meant for me. It was actually a very disruptive experience because I ended up leaving university after a year of this because it blew open all of my senses. So suddenly I could see everything. I could hear everything. It wasn't just the channeling. I completely switched on. And there were all sorts of things flowing through me all the time, all sorts of messages. I didn't seem to have any ability to shape or be in agreement with, or I don't like to use the word control, but I didn't feel like I was in control of what was happening. I would suddenly come out with messages when I was in a pub drinking beer with friends, or I would be sitting in a lecture theater and suddenly I would see everybody's energy fields and hear everybody's thoughts. It was very overwhelming. So that was just the beginning. And then everything really began in taking everything apart and starting to build again.
I mean, you really have superpowers. I mean, this is what we watch on television in all these series that, you know, all of a sudden you start to hear everybody's thoughts and you see things. And to me, This is so intriguing and it's so fascinating. And I would love for you to share how that feels like. Just for us who are not experiencing this, what does it feel to be in a reality where you hear people's thoughts? And is it possible to hear them all at once? And how do you know which thought belongs to what person? And also you said that you saw everything. What does that mean? So I would love for you to share, how is that like?
It's overwhelming because it's not something that you feel you are doing for a particular purpose. I feel that many people, when they develop their gifts, and by the way, I don't feel that they are superpowers exclusive to me or to anyone who has intuitive capacity. I have come to understand very clearly that this is our inherent human capacity, but we have forgotten how to use it. Mm-hmm. So the volume came on very strong for me, and the next 10 to 15 years was learning how to turn the volume off and then turn it on gradually to be able to direct it. So in the beginning, it was overwhelming. Well, you know, probably when you're a young person, you begin to discover what people say and what they do is not always what's happening underneath. So a lot of things were revealed to me in a very personal way. It was sometimes frightening. I felt like I was really out of control within my own experience. And so, of course, that was perfect for me, because what it did was it led me to a space where I needed to move into solitude, and I needed to move into meditation, and I needed to move into communion within myself so that I could really start to become empowered with this, because it certainly wasn't an empowering experience in the beginning. And there were many times where I thought I was going crazy. I remember sitting on the couch one day and listening to classical music, because I have a music background and it's very calming for me. And I looked down at my hand and I could see another outline to my hand. And I thought that I had a vision problem. And then, of course, I realized that the outline stopped once it came to the sleeve of my clothing. So I was actually really starting to see all sorts of things. So it was a challenging time, and it was at odds with the logical mind. It was at odds with trying to study and trying to strategize and trying to problem solve. It was cataclysmic, I would say.
Yeah, it's hard to sort of relate to when I don't have that experience myself. And just to finish that question, like, how does it feel to read people's thoughts? Like, what is that like? Do you hear it?
Yes. So you hear it. And it's the same with any kind of aspect of channeling or mediumship or intuition. We have a lot of different senses. So a lot of people feel thoughts. A lot of people hear thoughts. A lot of people think thoughts. For me, because I am quite a visual learner, I was studying architecture at the time, so I'm very much into the visual representation of things. For me, everything would appear as a visual representation and then a thought. So the challenge was then, which thoughts are mine and which are not mine? Which thoughts belong to me and then don't belong to me? And, of course, this is something very common that I feel many intuitives and mediums and people who wish to develop these capacities, this is one of the biggest questions when they begin, is how do I know if this is just my thought and I'm making this up, or if this is actually something that I am sensing in the collective field? So that's a big question for a lot of people.
So when you said that you were in that room and you heard all the students, because I get this picture in my mind, all the students' thoughts, you understood that these are not mine. Was it like a lot of like just people talking at the same time?
It was actually a lot of people's fears, interestingly. So that's, to me, even in this moment, I've never actually thought about this before. So thank you for asking the question. as I remember it, what I was seeing and hearing was everybody's anxieties.
Oh, wow.
So that's interesting to me, because what that suggests to me is that vibrationally, I was in a space of anxiety. So I was tuning into the vibration of anxiety in everybody else.
Hmm. Interesting. And further along on the journey, how did you then learn how to control this so you were not overwhelmed all the time? Because I've interviewed a couple of guests who, you know, started drinking. They got really problems because it was just too overwhelming having these senses, like the world became too overwhelming for them. And they had to go through that journey of sobering up and dealing with how to sort of control these abilities.
Yes. And absolutely, I went through that. So after a year of this, I decided my brain wasn't working in the same way anymore. It didn't want attention to detail and study activities. It wanted the expansive experiences. So I went on a bit of a quest, actually, to find a teacher or a mentor. And, I did this for a few years. I went over to the United Kingdom because I thought I might have more ability there. I was from a very small town in Australia, and I did approach a couple of people there, and the general agreement was I was too young and I didn't know what I was doing, and there wasn't any willingness to really to mentor me. So I went overseas, and I did that for a couple of years, and still no success, still no luck. So I tried to read books about these things. I tried to find teachers. And it wasn't successful for me in that sense, because as life would have it, every time I thought that I had found somebody who could help me, they either rejected taking me on or they suddenly weren't available. And this went on for many, many years. So it was perfect because I've never followed another teacher, and I don't look at other people's teachings. That's perfect for me. So I ended up in Indonesia, in Bali, for a couple of years by the time I was early 20s. And I just sat and meditated, and I wanted to discover the universe within myself. Because I thought, instead of trying to negotiate between myself and the outer reality, I will find a different reality inside. And actually, this is where I had my most profound life-changing experience. It wasn't the channeling experience at 18 that was life-changing. It was the experience of discovering unity consciousness and having an experience of oneness that lasted 4 days.
I would love for you to share, because I just had a thought. I would love to hear some of your mystical experiences, because I know my audience is very fascinated by that, and myself included.
Well, thank you for asking. It's so interesting because, you know, with the phenomena of channeling, people get very interested in that because it's such a different experience for us as humans. But what channeling did was it led me back within myself.
Hmm.
And so I used to sit meditating for many hours in the hot sun, trying to come to that place within myself where I would understand everything. Because what I realized was that ever since I was quite young, I was always interested in metaphysics. And because I had so many capacities, so I would try learning about astrology or aromatherapy or colors, or reincarnation, or Reiki, or so many different things. And my idea was that if I go and learn all of these different things, I will have different pieces for the puzzle. And the more parts to this puzzle I can put together, then I will understand what all of this is. I will understand the meaning of life and the nature of us. And so I wanted more of that. I wanted to really understand what is this. And I wanted to have an experience of what I called at the time God. I want to know this. I want to know what this is because I have a concept of it, but that's not the same as knowing. And so I would sit and meditate every day because I was on a mission. I am going to know this. And there was an ashram down the road, and I thought, I'm going to go and join this ashram. It was quite a famous ashram. And they rejected me. They wouldn't let me in either. It was so interesting. So I had to go within myself. So I sat on this balcony, and I did it for 10 days. And on the 11th day, I sat there, and I had been there for maybe 4 hours. And I had tried. I just want to know what this is. I just want to know God. And it was getting so hot. And I just, at that moment, this huge hornet, insect, they hurt when they bite you, came and landed on me, on my arm, while I was meditating. And in that moment, something happened. And I looked at this giant insect and I said, I give up. I swore, actually. I said some bad words. I said, I'm done. And in that moment where I said, I give up, it happened. And something happened. And all of a sudden, and I was sitting on this balcony overlooking a lagoon in Bali. All of a sudden, I was everywhere. I was everywhere. I was the tree. I was the ocean. I was the sky. I was the people down in the street. I was everything. And it was the most exquisite, expansive experience I believe anyone could ever have in this human life. And I stayed in that state for 4 days. So I was walking down the street and I was everyone walking past me. I was in the restaurant and I was the table. I was the waiter. Someone rode their motorcycle past. I was 1 meter away from the side of the road and they crashed and died right next to me. And it was all perfect. And I was that experience also. And there was just this incredible state of peace. It didn't last forever. But once you see that, you cannot unsee it. And it changes everything. So that was my experience at 24.
Oh, wow. My goodness. I sort of get pictures in my mind about how that would look like and feel like. And I know that I can't understand at all how that would feel like. Did you have sort of, a narrator in your mind saying, oh, my goodness, what's happening? Am I God now?
Like,
No.
No, because in that state, there is an absence of your individual self. That state, no longer existed.
Oh.
It was only this.
Oh, wow. So it was afterwards, maybe, where you were like, what happened?
Afterwards. So afterwards, I knew what had happened because when something like that happens, there's no question. It's an undeniable truth. Then the question is, how many other people know about this?
Right.
all my life so far, I've been trying to find the pieces to the puzzle, and then I realized I was asking the wrong question because I was asking what picture is made when all the pieces of the puzzle are there. Now what can I see? What I wasn't asking was, what is the puzzle made of? Because what I realized is that when you have a jigsaw puzzle, we're so interested in the image on top of the puzzle. We're not saying, what is this puzzle? And then you realize that every piece of the puzzle is made of the same thing. And that's what we don't pay attention to. We pay attention to the image that we're creating rather than what is the substance. And of course, once you remove the image from the jigsaw puzzle, it's all the same.
I'm curious then how it was like becoming yourself again and existing in this reality. You said it lasted for about 4 days. Did it then disappear and leave you, or has it sort of been a sense or a feeling that you can tap into again, or is it part of you? Because I've interviewed many who have had near-death experiences, and some of them have really trouble with integrating the experience afterwards. They have trouble living in that reality. Everything has sort of changed within them. So they struggle doing the things that they always used to do. Some are leaving their partners, and a lot of them are speaking about the importance of integrating the experience. So I'm curious, how was it like for you coming out of that experience and still have to be a human?
Well, it's a challenge, and it's a dance. It's a dance because being human inherently is about experiencing your universality in a very finite way. So I always like to think of us as humans as fountain pens, and the ink of universal consciousness flows through us and we write stories onto the paper. But we're not actually writing the story per se. We make ourselves available for life to happen. And so there's always a dance between I'm making life happen. These are my goals. I'm trying to get here. This is what I need to do. This is the cause to get the effect. This is duality. Or I am available for life to unfold through me. And it is a dance, because our whole construct of society is based upon cause and effect. If you don't put in the effort, nothing's going to happen. You have to know where you're going to get there. And of course, you realize that there's nowhere to go. The biggest thing that we can do for humanity is to be available for life to happen through us.
That is interesting. How do we do that?
It is a dance, and I feel that the globalization of media, and when I say globalization of media, I mean our interconnectedness as humans. I don't mean the systems of control there, but the systemization that allows us to become more interconnected begins to show us that we're actually not individuals, we're a collective consciousness. And when you start to remind yourself that you're a collective consciousness, you start to see yourselves in other people. One of the big things that we focus on with our messages is the more conscious you become, the more you realize that there's not a lot of distinction between the personal experience and the collective experience. And there's a lot of teachers that talk about depersonalizing. So if you have a thought or a feeling or anxiety, or I'm sad today or I'm excited today, we say, I am that. That's me. I'm responsible for that. But there's something bigger at play, because we also know that there is a collective sense of anxiety perhaps today, or a collective sense of hope today, because we're all existing in one collective consciousness. So the practice of reminding yourself of this, for me personally, is actually talking about it. Because when you talk about it and you express it and you communicate it, it becomes something that now forms in your reality. And I feel this is very important. And a lot of people don't talk about this so much, because spirituality and awakening has always been such a personal interior experience. But we're moving into now an era of connectivity. Mm-hmm. Therefore, talking about it and how you're experiencing things, we're seeing this everywhere now. This is what you're doing. this is a way that we make the invisible become visible.
Right. Interesting. I love that perspective. That was a bit new to me. You're so right. Like, we talk about the inner experience all the time, and that it actually has a value speaking about it. Even though not everybody's open for it, I'm just thinking about people around me who is not open to it, but I could still speak about it as my own truth. Like, I don't have to hold back in speaking about it. I'm just doing it on YouTube. Who are you channeling? I know you're channeling for Earth. You're channeling about the ascension process that we're in, and I've heard a couple of channelings with you. Who are you channeling? Are there different beings and energies, or is it sort of one source or source itself?
Ah, great question. Well, it depends where you're viewing it from. So when I first started channeling, of course, I hadn't had my experience of unity consciousness. There were different streams that were coming through. And for the sake of people's current understandings and the sake of being able to be identifiable as a source of wisdom, aspects of consciousness come through that have identified themselves as ascended, you call them ascended masters perhaps, or people call them ascended masters. So
millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Serapis Bey was the first to come through me, and he's the one that really opened things up. And then Saint Germain and Kuthumi. And of course, as my own awareness of unity consciousness really developed, they started to weave together and come through as a group consciousness. They call themselves the masters.
All right. Well, maybe we are ready to hear from them, if you're ready as well.
Yes, of course. And I just want to say one more thing too, because those who will be listening to this who have an awareness of what unity consciousness means may ask the question, well, how do you channel something other than yourself if we're all one?
Good question.
And of course, the more you become aware of your oneness, the more you realize that you're just bringing out another aspect of the one consciousness through you, which is also a representation of one consciousness. All one tree, different branches. So we just bring through a different branch of the tree.
Love that picture.
Okay, so would you like to begin with a question, or would you like us just to dive in?
I have many questions. You could just dive in and then I'll come with my questions.
Okay. Greetings to you. We are with you. And it is our great joy to be expressing through a human experience, which is a reminder for all that you are expressing through a human experience. Your humanity is the doorway that allows the intelligence of cosmic consciousness to be expressed within your reality. There is so much perceived individuation within the human blueprint. Indeed, no two humans are exactly alike. Of course, because the grand design of your reality is for differentiation, individuation. How many versions of consciousness can be expressed simultaneously? Humans consider themselves to be problems. We are problems that must be solved. There is a problem with humanity. There is a problem with your planetary experience. There is a problem with myself. And yet what we say to you is that your differentiation and your distinction actually allows more consciousness to be expressed, because the prime motivation of what flows through you as life, your life essence, its prime motivation is to create more. And of course, it is an ingenious design for a reality to be created such as yours, where there's so much differentiation and so much distinction that so much can be created. And yet, there is a grand desire within the systems and structures of your reality and those who have shaped and created them to bring humanity to order, to bring humanity into consistency and uniformity. You see this with your education system. You see this within your political structures. You even see it within your health and medical systems in the way that you attempt to regulate. And yet, in our view, the human is not designed to be regulated. The human is designed to create beyond regulation. Because if you are all regulated, you cannot create. Now, there is a great dichotomy that is the glorious challenge for all who present themselves as human. And it is this: you have an inherent knowing and an inherent design for unification. It is a great desire within all of you to return to source, to return to unification. It is a great desire for all who are listening to experience the return home. That is the place where there is no individuation. With that, you express through individuation. So it is design-wise and purposefully part of your experience to know inherently unification, but to express through individuation. Both of them are valuable. Both of them are sacred. And both of those polarities are required for the evolution of human consciousness. What is important is that you have awareness of both, and that one is not considered more valuable than the other.
Oh, thank you. I have tons of questions. Okay. I've been curious about the big questions all my life, especially what happens after we die. And even though I have gotten a lot of answers to that, I'm still eager to learn and understand what happens when we die. I think a lot of other people also can have a feeling of, will I disappear when we go to this oneness, when we experience this oneness? So could you share a little bit about what happens when we die?
Well, of course. And of course, you are asking the question that we will answer in a different way than you expected. Because yeah. What you are speaking about is the death of the physical expression. That's not your experience of dying thus far. And we will say to you directly that you have experienced what it is to die. And that was your identity dying. And you're actually afraid of your identity dying again, because you've already experienced that in this life. You've already experienced the utter destruction of who you thought you were. And you will also recall that when that occurred, it seemed as if you lost many things. And whether or not it was consciously your choice to let things go or not, it was all a result of the death of your identity. Humans are designed for what you call linear longevity. They're not designed to have very short physical expressions or lives. In our view, the human physical lifespan has decreased in what you call linear time because there is a human unwillingness to continually die to identity. And indeed, it is the greatest conscious humans on the planet, the sages and the teachers that have walked the planet, that have had longitudinal physical expressions because they are willing to have their identities die continually. Indeed, the original human design, you can see over millennia, the lifespans have become shorter and shorter. Now you may say, well, actually the lifespan in this century or in the previous century is getting longer and longer. Why would that be? Because more and more humans now are willing to die to their identities. You're willing to reinvent who you think you are within one perceivable lifespan.
That is an interesting perspective. I haven't looked at it that way, that I've actually died already, but I know what you're referring to. So death is just another transition in the same way that I felt that I've changed in my life.
Of course. And the same thing is also occurring when you have a physical death. It's a death of another identity, and then you reemerge in a new one.
And what will that be?
Well, there are many humans that you have spoken with that have come to you with how their minds have interpreted the experience. Agree? Because as long as that experience occurs and it comes back to an identity with a mind, it is referenced through that mind identity. And of course, as we have suggested, there are many humans that are, of course, in an experience that seems very personal to them, and then they experience the impersonal. But when they reemerge, it comes back to a personal experience. So there are glimpses. There are glimpses, as glimpsed by the mind, because remember, the mind's the only thing that can reference it for you. Why is it that when you have a deeply profound, what you call spiritual experience, the mind has a very difficult time even describing what has happened? Agree? It's very difficult for the mind to reference something that is of no mind. Mm-hmm. But we do wish to bring the conversation back to you, if you are agreeable.
Okay.
And we would say that the reason that you are afraid of dying, perhaps, is because you have already experienced what it feels like to die.
Well, I'm not afraid to die. It's just I really want to live. Like, there was a time where I wanted to die, like in my depression when I was 20. But now I feel like life is so good and I want it to last for a long, long time.
Yes. But the fear is still there that everything that is good will be lost.
Yes.
Because you know what that feels like. And this is an important point because humans already have a reference. If they're afraid of anything, it's because they already have a reference for it. Mm-hmm. And yet, the death experience of the physical body, you actually have no reference for.
Right. So how could you explain how that would feel like?
Well, in our experience within the Earth realm, because we have had many experiences within the Earth realm, it is quite exquisite. And it is exquisite because it's very similar to the experience that this one was describing to you, where suddenly there is just a view and it is an awe-inspiring view. And in that moment, you have disappeared. If you have what you call a near-death experience and you come back to the body, that experience of disappearing unto your own sense of individual self is now referenced by the mind, and the mind has a view of it and then identifies with it.
Somehow, I do not completely understand, but that's probably because I'm human. Will I have or feel myself as Janneke on the other side? And for everybody listening, will they feel that, okay, the physical body is dead it's on the floor and I'm hovering above my body, but I still feel like this is me.
Well, that's in the moment where you're still in that reality, because that's the moment where you view yourself. If you can view yourself in that reality, you're still in that reality. Your mind's still there with the experience. Okay. Your sense of individual self is still there. If you actually move beyond that, mm-hmm. and you move back into unity consciousness, because in our wisdom, that's what occurs when you have a physical death, you move back into unity consciousness and then reappear again as another expression of the divine. There is no question of what is this individual experience for me? Because the only experiences of near-death experience that humans have are humans who have returned to their mind to be able to describe it. So this is the mind attempting to understand what it cannot understand. And that is not to diminish the experience or the ecstasy or the glory or the great gift of those who experience that return and back into the mind, because it's a wonderful gift to humanity to glimpse there is something wonderful beyond. Hmm. But it's still being interpreted by a mind that cannot truly know it.
Hmm. Is there such a thing as reincarnation? And is it the same soul incarnating again and again? Or is that an impossible question to answer? Because in reference to what you said, I sort of lose my individuation and go back to source, and then I come back as another expression. So that wouldn't be the same soul in a way incarnating. And that leads to what is a soul?
It's a wonderful question. And of course, it's all based upon where humanity's belief structures sit. Now, humanity and the earth reality is a very unique experience, because you have been experiencing what you call the karmic cycle, which is based on a closed system in our view. And this is what has resulted in your earth reality being experienced as a closed system. It's very difficult for you to experience anything beyond it, agree? Very difficult. This is the quest to go out, the quest to see what else lies beyond. So it is your experience of time and the cycles that have of time that are created within the mechanics of your reality that bring you to the experience of repetition. And this is what you call the karmic cycle. Now, what is this great shift for humanity? The great shift from humanity, and many have been speaking about it, is moving out of this time cycle and back into expansiveness within the cosmic consciousness with all your brothers and sisters. So when we speak about reincarnation and when you speak about souls, what you're speaking of in our view is the human experience of repetition. And it's a very difficult loop to get out of. And if you have heard very clearly what we have said about your systems and structures on your planet, everything in your planetary experience has reinforced this system. We must get it right and we have to start again, but it's very difficult to ever move out of it. And so the shift into fifth dimensional reality and beyond, in essence, is starting to move out of that containment, because what's containing you in the karmic cycle, in our view, is not your inability to become all that you are. It's the time cycle and systems and structures that keep you there, because there's a great earnest within humans to transcend that limitation. Now that you can move more expansively, you realize that it's time that has kept you in that experience, or at least your belief in it. And so the more conscious you become, the more you begin to realize that it's not a question of I had this life and then this life and then this life. What you realize is that I'm now experiencing myself with all of these lives simultaneously, because I am the one consciousness that is expressing itself in individuated forms. Therefore, and we have an understanding that you have experienced this already, you begin to have glimpses of yourself in other versions of life. You could glimpse yourself in what you call a past life or what you call a future life, are they really past and future, or are you beginning to expand so much in your awareness because of this planetary shift that you are now experiencing different aspects of yourself simultaneously? Because in essence, consciousness is multidimensional. The human, of course, is multidimensional, but you experience yourself in linear time. That is how we would say it to you.
Fascinating. Speaking of time, 2024, could you say something about 2024? Sort of give us a feeling of what this year is about.
Well, of course. And in our view this year, many of you have been experiencing great transition. And so much of the past 8 to 15 years has been about, first of all, discovering the true nature of yourselves, again, waking up from this cycle of hypnotic repetition and beginning to discover I am more than this, in that it's become about disidentification. So particularly within the last 3 to 6 years, for so many of you, it's been about what am I letting go of about myself? What are my limiting beliefs? Who did I think that I was that is no longer appropriate for me? And it hasn't really been about accumulating knowledge. It's actually been about letting go of what you think that you knew. This has been quite devastating to the ego mind collectively, but it's also been quite devastating to the individuals who have attempted to cling to outdated senses of identities and expressions that are not allowing them to move beyond the earth limitation. And so because the last 3 to 8 years have been about this releasing and letting go, so many have been crying out, when do we see the new in the world? When do we begin to see the shift in humanity actually materializing itself in how we are as humans in our earth reality? Well, let us say this to you, dear ones. 2024 is a year where you will begin to see the systems and structures emerge. It's also a year where you will begin to see a reckoning. In many ways, this is a year of revolution, but let us be very clear that revolution in the history of your memories and how revolution has been presented to you has been retribution. There is a revolution and there is retribution. We wish to punish those who are guilty. This is a year where there is great revealing and there is a great uprising and evolution to change the systems and structures within your reality to more suit where you are as a collective consciousness. But it is a year to move into grace rather than retribution, which means that we can see that this is what has been happening and we are wanting change, but we are now more focused on what it is that we can bring as an alternative than focusing on the retribution and the rage for what has already been. And this is the great leap in humanity. This is what makes you humans. This is the rebirth of humanity because you can see what has happened, but now you're more focused with what can we now begin to foster for growth. And so because of this, in the last few months of 2024, you're very likely to see the beginnings of new systems and structures that are more conducive to human evolution. And that's where you can begin to have enthusiasm. We're finally beginning to see something new. We're finally beginning to see our collective union materialized. And we want to suggest that there are new systems coming to your planet that will so revolutionize how you create an interface with each other that it will be very difficult for you to be able to validate how you have already been doing things, because there is an enormous shift that is upon you. And indeed, everything that you feel that you already know about systemization and technology is about to change.
Wow. So is it fair to say that 2024 is very different than other years? Like, this is the year where it seemed like you were basically saying it, that this is the year where we will really see the result of this shift of consciousness.
This is where you begin to see it collectively and materialize towards the end of 2024. Many humans are in the final expression of the loss of identity. And what we suggest to you is that by the middle of the year, you collectively move into now what do I want to build? And by the end of 2024, there's enough collective agreement in place for those new platforms to begin to reveal themselves.
That is very exciting.
Yes, but it's also very important, heed our words, as we suggested, that one is not focused on retribution or judgment, but rather on the enthusiasm and the fostering with grace of what is arriving.
Right.
Where is your focus, in other words?
My last question for you today, what is the most important question that we ask ourselves right now?
The most important question you could ask yourself in this moment is, do I exist?
Wow.
It's so important because humans, they do not celebrate their existence. Even in your focus, it's looking out. What is happening out here? When you say to yourself, I exist, some humans will say, I am. In our view, I exist is far more powerful because it's embodying. I am here. I exist. And in that moment, you are declaring your presence in an active creation. And therefore, in that proclamation, I exist, you are now actively creating your reality. This is embodiment of consciousness in your human form. This is the awakening. Humans have come to believe they do not have the right to exist, and everything that you have done in your life has principally been about justifying your existence.
True. Thank you.
So powerful, so important. We thank you for asking the question.
Thank you.
It is our great joy to be with you in this way.
Welcome back.
Oh, I was still here, just moving my awareness aside.
Right, you do sound a bit different. Like, how is it like for you channeling? Are you present all the time, and do you know what's going on?
Present all the time, and I get a very amazing visual of everything that is happening. It's like watching a movie.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. So, any thoughts about what came forward?
Sorry?
Any thoughts about what came forward?
I thought it was a very strong message today, actually.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of enthusiasm to have that message expressed. And the masters are very good at gently disrupting what people believe also, so that something new can emerge.
Right. Yeah, it's. I find with channeling that I often feel like I have to listen to it several times because it's a lot of words, and it's sort of my mind is like, what was that? What was that? And then I have to hear it again to sort of really get the depth of it because it's sort of a bit new in a way. It feels like new and fresh and different from what we learn in society and in this life. It is like these new perspectives that are like, what? Oh, okay. And my mind is like trying to catch up, and it's not really managing that.
Yes. And so then, of course, I realize this is why I never had a teacher, because if I did, my mind would want to reject
these
messages that come through, because I would already be so focused on these beliefs.
Yeah.
Well, we always say, if you don't know what to believe, don't believe any of it. Believe yourself.
That makes sense. Well, this has been very interesting. There are three questions that I ask all my guests. And the first one is, what is self-love to you?
Oh, self-love. It's acknowledging that I am divine nature expressing itself.
Mm. Beautiful. And what is happiness to you?
Happiness is the awareness that everything is as it is, as it is, as it is.
Mm. And what is the deeper meaning of life from your perspective?
It's the great expression of possibility.
Ah, nice. I love that. So, Rebecca, tell us a little bit about your work and how people can find you if they want to connect with you.
Oh, thank you. So I have a website. It's my name, RebeccaDawson.com. And I do a lot of messages on YouTube, and I run seminars and workshops and do some personal sessions with the masters as well. Lots of different offerings. There's a lot of free content on there that you can explore.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming to the show today. This was very interesting, and I'd love to have you back one day. And thank you for all your wonderful work for humanity.
Oh, thank you too. It's such a blessing to be here, and gratitude to you for creating the conversation with me today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you want to become more who you are and live in alignment with your soul's purpose and explore a deeper meaning with your life, then you are most welcome to join Wisdom from North membership. If you want to go deeper, you can find all our English online courses and programs at wisdomfromnorth.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube just by searching for Wisdom from North. Until the next episode, much light from here.